Yo, welcome to episode 16 of Techish. We're back again. I'm Michael Behane.
Hey, it's Abajesi.
Yeah, we're going to make this a short and sweet episode, but let's get it cracking. So first things first, I want to talk about the whole controversy with Kylie Jenner on the cover of Forbes magazine.
Youngest self-made billionaire.
And that is the controversy, it's the word self-made. So it was tweeted out by Forbes, and then the person who runs the dictionary.com Twitter account quote tweeted it and was like, the definition of self-made is someone who's made it by themselves.
Yes.
Kind of throwing shade, right?
Yes.
And quite a few prominent black entrepreneurs were like, that I follow, were kind of like, well, why are you throwing shade? Like, are you just hating? Everybody that's kind of getting up her back is kind of just like, should just focus on their own shit. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And I want to know what your thoughts are, because it's a dicey issue, really. Like, what is self-made? Who is self-made? Can anybody even call themselves self-made?
It's really funny because one of the tweets I saw was like, I know plenty of reality stars that haven't made as much money as her. And for the record, she's not a billionaire yet. She's just on track to become the youngest ever billionaire because her cosmetics company is going to be turning over something like $420 million this year.
Can I clear something up that most people, like, it was a misconception I used to have, that if someone's a billionaire, it doesn't mean they have $1 billion in their account. It just means that their company, when valued at a multiple of their revenue or profit, is worth $1 billion. So you could have $400 million in profits.
Yes.
Your company's valued at 5 times profits, therefore you're a billionaire.
Exactly. So if she were to sell her company, she would become a billionaire. There we go. So what are my thoughts on it? I mean, it's an interesting one because, you know, she is in the lead in that company. Like, she's not a figurehead. She's not like a spokesperson. Mm. She holds the role of chief marketing officer. Mm. She holds the role of chief creative officer. She has hundreds of thousands, you know, across all the different platforms, millions of followers.
Hundreds of millions,
across,
I think.
You know, Instagram, etc. Like, she's really like driving the growth there. And that is all legit. And she's only 21, which
crazy.
Is crazy. But at the same time, you know, self-made implies you have, like, no privileges. Like, self-made implies, you know, you started from the bottom, you worked your way up. It's, like, pure hustle and pure grind. And the reality is, like, she literally comes from a clan of successful entrepreneurs. Her mom, Kris Jenner, is the CFO of that company. Now, I don't know about you, but my mom does not have, the CFO capacity in her. Like, no shade to her, but, like, that's just not her expertise. Like, she's not a Hollywood mom. She's not a reality star mom. Yeah. And I think to say that she's done this all on her own back is to just neglect the fact that there are so many people who, with, you know, less opportunities, have grinded even harder and not got anywhere close to that.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, without the whole Kardashian connection, without the fact that she's been on reality TV since she was like 8 years old, the company couldn't be what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes people get a bit too caught up in the whole like American dream narrative, because the reality is, like, America as a country right now is completely divided along racial lines. And the American dream is clearly more possible for people of a certain color and a certain gender and a certain race. And
Tax bracket. Let's keep it.
And a tax bracket. Yeah, exactly.
Like, and that might even be more important, to be honest. Because in a startup world, the one thing we always like wish that you could fix when you have your own startup is distribution. So she was born into a family that had a reality TV show with audiences of already 1 million and a mum that was managing $1 million brands, her other siblings, essentially, right?
Exactly.
So in terms of a head start, it's amazing. Now, the devil's advocate position is, how many rich kids do you know that have started $1 billion brands?
True.
But then the reverse of that is, well, not every rich kid has a TV show. Right, as soon as they turn 16, right? Not every rich kid has a TV show with that kind of distribution, with that kind of audience. There are plenty of rich kids that are just quiet, living their life, and you never know who they are, right? So, I don't know. I mean, if you remember, like, a couple of years ago, who were we cussing? We were cussing Donald Trump for saying that his daddy gave him a small loan of $1 million. Do you remember that whole furor around that, right? Why were we laughing at that? Because it was obviously ridiculous. You are not self-made.
Yeah.
Daddy gave you a milli. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when we look at that, we can all be like, yeah, that's dead. You dickhead, blah, 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 blah. But now we're like, oh, like, you know, not everybody can do it and rare. But playing devil's advocate again on myself, Donald Trump is now in a position where he's basically chopping down the opportunities for other people that are less fortunate than he is, whereas Kylie Jenner is just living her life, right?
Yes.
So I feel like we can obviously see the hypocrisy of somebody who is got every like handout in the world and then is saying you should pick yourself up by your bootstraps, whereas Kylie isn't doing that. And if she ever did start saying that, that's when I'd have to come in and be like, okay, she's canceled, like, you're an idiot kind of thing. You don't even know how lucky you are, essentially, right? It's a complicated one.
I think it also shows how like attitude towards like women's roles in society is changing. Because I read this interview with Kylie where she was saying how growing up, the idea of being a businesswoman was not appealing in any way. She was like, that wasn't anything I ever aspired to be.
Yeah.
And she's like, but once I started, you know, I think her first ever product was like a lipstick kit.
Right.
And that like sold out instantly and generated millions. And she suddenly realized like, wow, like I could actually turn this into something. Like there are people that want something that's not out there and I can make it for them. And I understand them. Because, you know, her sister, Kim Kardashian West, also has a makeup line. Kylie's is outperforming hers.
Yeah.
And she just pointed out the fact that, you know, there's 20 years between them. You know, she's connecting with that young audience.
Gen Z.
Exactly. And in a way, I think what's cool about it is, like, hopefully more women that see her are going to think, maybe I should be a businesswoman. You know, what products can I make?
Yeah.
What can I sell?
But not just women, like little girls. Like, you know, right? Like my little cousin, she follows her. She's like 14, 15. Now, what does it say when the person that you're following and idolizing is on the cover of Forbes magazine? It's not just a reality TV star anymore. So that's one thing, an angle that, you know, you're kind of raising that I haven't really fully appreciated.
Yeah.
That she's on the cover of Forbes. She's popularizing the idea of, you can do your own thing.
But I definitely think saying self-made, I mean, don't get me wrong, she's hardworking, she's bright, and she is working what she has. But she also has an incredible amount of privilege. And let's not throw that to one side and make it out like everyone's going to end up like
her. I personally feel like we should retire the word self-made. Because first things first, I didn't give birth to myself. You see what I'm saying? I ain't I'm not self-made.
I did. Nobody came out of an egg.
Yeah, there we go. Exactly, yeah. Came out of a cocoon, like, fully formed. Like, what's up, guys? I'm here. Like, nobody gave birth to themselves. So who the hell is self-made, really and truly? Obviously, I'm being facetious, but you get what I'm saying here, right? Yeah. And even somebody like me, I'm born in the West, right? If I was born as a farmer in Bangladesh, for example, there's no way I'm going to even reach the timid levels that I've reached now.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So it's like, let's retire that word. Let's stop trying to push that out there. Like, and I think Forbes magazine, it was a bit of a faux pas to use the hashtag self-made woman. Like, come on.
Yeah, like, laziness. You know. Unless that's what they wanted.
Yeah, they're
unless
smart.
They were trying to make like a publicity spot.
And do you remember like last time we were talking about Forbes and their damn lists, right? We were like, bun Forbes, like why are they in charge? Like, right? But they're actually quite clever in terms of how they maintain their relevancy.
Oh yeah, they create controversy.
The list, the controversy, like I'm sure somebody in the office knew what they were doing when they typed in self-made.
Of course they did.
You know what I mean? But, let's call that one a day. That's a whole can of worms, really.
Yo, Kylie, if you want to sponsor, though.
I think every episode, we're like, every time we mention someone rich, we're like, do you want to sponsor us, please? One day it will happen.
Oh, my gosh.
Cool. Next topic.
So I thought it would be interesting, actually, kind of, like, connected to that, to talk about what Diddy was saying last week about, like, Black Panther.
What's Diddy saying?
So he was basically saying that, like, Black Panther is, like, a cruel experiment. Like,
a cruel experiment.
Yeah.
Rotted.
Well, he's just saying that, like, on the one hand, it's amazing that when, you know, mass media or like Hollywood or whatever decide to, you know, tap into, you know, Black entertainment and, you know, create this film with like Black cast and Black music and everything, you know, resonates with audience, becomes like a blockbuster, becomes a bestseller, and that's awesome. And he's like, but that doesn't change the industry enough. He's like, well, Black Panther is amazing. He's like, if you look at movies structurally, there's still no more Black directors getting funding to do major releases. There still aren't Black actors being cast in leading roles in mainstreaming films that aren't like, this is a Black film, you know? And then he brought it into the music industry because obviously that's his domain. And he was like, let's look at the music industry. The music industry is like always leveraging Black culture, literally appropriating it, capitalizing off of it. Are there any major music record labels with a Black CEO?
I don't know, but I don't think there is.
The answer is no. So what Diddy's trying to say is, you know, it's all good and well for us to like see these successes, but if anything, we should be even more like, I guess, critical of the leadership of the industries, because he's like, it's not enough for me to see me there. Now I want to see me represented in power. I want to see us represented in the leadership.
Basically, like behind the scenes, right?
Yes, exactly. Behind the scenes in terms of power and leadership. And like what's so cool about Kylie, for example, like I said, she owns C-suite positions within her company too. Chief marketing officer, chief creative officer. It is happening more and more. Like I know, for example, like ASAP, like used to set his
ASAP Rocky
used to send his, you know, songs to everyone. No one listened to him. He was just like, screw it, I'm just gonna go on my own. Started just doing like independent releases, and then finally got signed to a major label. But like, how cool would it be if there were a major label that actually had someone from that community leading it.
But when you say a major label, the thing about music is, that's complicated, is that there are like these sub-labels that are owned like by black people, like Jay-Z might own Roc Nation, for example. But then the labels that own those labels,
yes,
you're probably not going to see that many black faces. Maybe a CEO, but not in terms of the ownership structure. And I'm talking out of ignorance here. I'm not an expert in the music industry. But I agree with the sentiment that Diddy's saying. Like, end of the day, like, what black person got paid the most out of Black Panther? Maybe Chadwick Boseman got paid $1 or $2 million. That film grossed $1.7 billion.
Yeah, the people right? that so, like, really made money. Yeah, the
nobody in the black community got that paper. Like, no, do you see what I'm saying? And there was actually like a change.org protest to say, can like Disney like please like donate like $1 or $2 million like to the black community, to a black school, right? And that's like, we're coming in there cap in hand saying please, like,
yeah,
it's because that film was funded by, you know, a white corporation. Let's keep it 100. Like, no disrespect to Disney, like, I got love for Disney, they raised me in it, but like, that is what it is. And black capital wasn't really behind that. So Diddy's kind of saying like, yo, like, on face value, it's a black film, quote unquote, but is it really a black film?
Exactly. Right? That's what I mean. So that's why I feel like sometimes when we talk about progress, inclusion, we have to accept that there's actually like a lot of elements to it, and we need to be driving all of them. Like, representation is 100% a piece. And we've talked about this before, like,
yeah,
films like Hidden Figures are great. Films like Black Panther are great. That's amazing. That's the representation piece. Okay, awesome.
But what even about that's the still actual... not done.
That's still not done.
It's still not done.
I'm not saying it's done, but I'm saying it's happening, and that's great. So now we need to start talking about, like you say, this behind the scenes. Like, where is the real power and influence and decision making, and are we at that table?
You might have noticed, like, when this episode comes out, that maybe your Twitter following has gone down slightly. If not, don't panic and check just now.
Keep listening. I'm so popular.
Basically, Twitter has like deleted like a whole bunch of bots and like fake accounts from their platform.
70 million in 2 months.
That's wild, right?
Yeah.
And actually, I think their stock took a bit of a hit actually when that happened. So the markets kind of panicked slightly. But personally speaking, I think it's a good thing. Like, I think Twitter is like, you know, one of the most undervalued companies, not necessarily economically, but, you know, like in terms of what it does for society. Like, I built my business on there. We've all done so much networking on there,
yeah,
right?
I love Twitter.
So them maintaining the quality of the site by getting rid of all these fake bots and stuff, to me, that's a good sign. I don't know why their stock went down.
If anything, the question is, so over the course of 2 months, you closed 70 million accounts. Why didn't you do that sooner? If such a high volume of your user base are spammers, bots, whatever.
I don't think they thought it was an issue until the election. And then, like, once the election
the
happened...
The election was, like, two years ago.
I think it's taken them a long time to basically figure out how to actually...
Do it
properly, right? Because even up until, like, 6 months ago, like... I would constantly see bots. Because I guess I'm in the industry, I can kind of tell what a bot is straight away. Like, normally it's an account and it's got a random series of numbers at the end of it, right? And they will always tweet about something political. Like, I saw Carla tweet something and he was engaging with one guy who was clearly like a Russian bot. And the guy was just like sending like trolling statements back, like, oh, Donald Trump's the greatest. Like, you know, and I saw like, Carla engaging and I was like, yo, fam, that's a bot. Like, chill. And he's like, oh, shit, I didn't even know, kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So the platform... was almost ruined by it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have real life trolls anyway in life. There's idiots out there anyway. So it was a necessary step for them to cull it. Yeah, and you're right. It has come probably too little too late for democracy. Like, election ruined. Yeah. Whoops. Sorry, guys. Like, and even Brexit to a certain extent was filled with all these kind of UKIP bots, right?
Yeah.
So I'm glad they're doing it.
I would like
too
to
little, too late, maybe.
I mean, we've spoken before about, you know, what role should Twitter play in terms of being accountable to, you know, whatever, truth, justice, like no shadiness and no fake bots and all these fake accounts and whatever. And I think it's all good and well to shut the accounts down, but like, what are they also doing to like make it harder for people to create these?
I don't know. I haven't looked into the details. I think they have made it harder. I think even if your account, for example, if your account is locked, like it's a private account, and you've started to tweet a few like spammy type things, they'll shut you down. Like, even if you're not a spam account, actually. So they're really tightening it up. I think for a long time as well, I think the pressure was on for Twitter to like catch up to Facebook user numbers. You know, Facebook's got like 2 billion. So they were like, oh shit, we've only got like 300 million, whatever. So maybe it wasn't a priority because they thought we need to juice up our numbers to a certain extent. Why worry if we've got a few spam accounts? But I think it's probably better for Twitter to have 200 of the most valuable accounts. Like, you've got the president, ex-president, and Oprah Winfrey, and every person who matters, I hate to use that phrase, but every person that matters, quote unquote, using and engaging with your platform. It's better to have 200 million high quality users and influencers on your platform than to have 2 billion people sharing, like, you know, their little cousin's birthday, for example, right? No disrespect to Facebook in that sense, but you know what that platform is used for. But they just haven't figured out their business model. And I think that's where they've struggled. Not to make it completely about Twitter in terms of their you know, economic function, but...
Yeah. Anyways. No, but you're right. 336 million monthly active users. And they're still not really capitalizing on that.
Their stock's done, like, up until this dip, based off the bot thing, their stock has improved a bit. Like, it's gone up. I think it's doubled in the last year or two.
Yeah.
I'm kind of regretting not buying it. But, like... I think Jack Dorsey's making the right call. I think he's doing the right moves right now. I think a while ago, someone was complaining. I think it was Seth Rogen, the actor, comedian guy. He was like, why have you still verified, like, a lot of these kind of white supremacist type accounts?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like...
I'm still waiting on mine. They suspended verification, actually.
Yeah, because they didn't know what the F they were doing with the verification. Because verification is like... When a user sees verification, they think that the platform has kind of sanctioned them, but the platform has given them the A-OK, whereas Twitter thought verification was, you are who you say you are.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? It was like a confirmation of your identity, not
an endorsement.
Not an endorsement. There we go. That's the word I'm looking. Whereas, so they shut it down. I'm like, we're not going to verify any more people for now, which I kind of get. What does when you see verification, what does it mean to you?
To me, it means that you're a legit person, that you're like famous, probably... that's why I want mine. I was just like, you're a noteworthy person, you're notable, you're important enough that someone might want to make a fake version of you. Because ultimately, okay, that's why they made them, right?
Yeah.
Because if I went like Oprah Winfrey, they'd be like, the real Oprah Winfrey, Oprah's account, Oprah personal. And you'd be like, oh, which one's actually her? And then there's the one with the blue tick.
So isn't it endorsement though?
I've never really interpreted it as such, but I can see why people would. Do you remember
Milo Yiannopoulos?
Yeah.
So when he started acting a fool, I mean, he's always been a fool, but when he started acting a fool more, they took away his verification. Then they eventually threw him off the platform. But why take away his verification if verification is about identity? Because
that's confusing.
Because he still is who he is. So taking away his verification, what did that mean?
So if they did do that, then they should remove it for everyone that they don't approve of. Because if they're now saying, oh, we can use this verification tick as a way to support or not support you, then they should take it from, like, what, all these crazy... alt-right peeps.
Yeah, I think Silicon Valley is kind of caught in a rock and a hard place because that deciding who's to be verified based off their political position now means that you have to have a political stance as a company.
Yes.
And they don't want to do that. They want to act as if they're a platform, whereas it's impossible to just be a platform because you're run by human beings that have political views. So the company will have political views. For example, I'm hoping that they would say white supremacy is not okay. So... if verification is about endorsement, then you can't endorse these adverts.
I also think that, like, for technology companies to try to stay out of politics is, like, really pointless.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
And actually cowardly, if you ask me. Yeah, because ultimately, you've created technology that impacts the political landscape, that drives people's political decision-making, influences the democratic process, and then you're going to be like, oh, we don't want to get involved in politics. Like, I want to see more companies having some, like, friggin', you know, proverbial balls and standing up for stuff that they believe in, as we've spoken about before, especially with everything that's been happening in America, with, like, the immigration policy for, like, you know, migrants and asylum seekers and all this kind of stuff. Like, yeah, I think more companies need to recognize that there are people working for them, like building the product, supporting their business, helping them make money, that are impacted by politics in a very negative way. Like, there will be vulnerable people that work at Twitter. And if Twitter's just like, oh yeah, I'm just going to like support these people. I mean, yeah, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one. We've spoken previously about Amazon employees standing up to Jeff and being like, no, let's not share data with ICE, the immigration services. Maybe Twitter employees need to go back on that. So another piece of news that broke this week is an open letter that I published alongside dozens of other incredible women of color entrepreneurs here in London. We wrote an open letter to Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, about a cohort that he and his like related organizations organized, effectively a UK trade mission. So what they wanted to do was bring a bunch of women entrepreneurs together and take them to Silicon Valley. It was called Silicon Valley Comes to the UK. When it happened, they... you know, promoted it all over the press. Sadiq Khan talked about how it celebrated the diversity of London startup scene. And what was so notable in it was the absence of black women. And we really felt strongly that we needed to respond to this because what we've noticed happens in so many inclusion efforts in tech and just in the world in general is that they're never intersectional. They never recognize other types of women. It's basically like, okay, we've got some white women involved and that's where it stops. We're done now. And if you were to read this news piece, you might think there are no black women
in
London's tech startup scene, which is absolutely not the case. You know, we've mentioned Sharma Dean Reed before. She just raised $1 million for Beauty Stack.
And countless others.
We've got the founders of Afrocentrics. I mean, literally, we don't have enough time to list them. So what we wanted to do was basically talk about the fact that, you know, it's just not good enough. And it's been absolutely incredible, the amount of support that we've received. And I think what's really important here is that, you know, this isn't an attack against CityCon or against the people that have organized this mission. Ultimately, privilege is invisible to those who have it. Correct. So until we wrote this letter, they didn't see anything wrong with that. It's been very interesting to see the responses. I've seen a lot of defensiveness, and it makes me sad.
Has anybody like related to that mission said anything?
So we've actually had one of the lead organizers of the trade mission reach out to us and basically like ask us to come together for a meeting. We've shared some recommendations in the letter. If anyone wants to check it out, you know, I've shared it on Twitter, it's on social media. What we're really keen to do is make sure that it's actually something which leads to actions which are taken. Because I think it's very easy to have a conversation. It's very easy to have a meeting. But if nothing changes in terms of how they recruited for this cohort, how you know, how they judge people to be a part of it, then it just means that the next cohort will probably be identical. And we really want to avoid that. So yeah, like, let's just see what happens. And I think what's incredible about this is that it started with an idea. So Deborah, founder of YSYS, and Janet, founder of Janet's List, and a bunch of other black women read this article and then just started a conversation saying, you know, this isn't good enough, this isn't acceptable. That turned into a Twitter convo, that turned into a WhatsApp group. And over the last few weeks, we've effectively drafted the letter, got dozens of entrepreneurs from across the landscape, you know, white, black, male, female, young, old, to co-sign it and basically agree with the message of the letter, like, yes, you know, let's have it be more representative. All we're saying is that the cohort needs to be representative of London's startup scene. We are active in the scene and we see people. Specifically, we see black women, and the fact that there wasn't even a single one out of the dozens of people that went is just completely baffling. So watch this space. Hopefully something will actually happen and it won't just be lip service. Ironically, one of the organizers wrote back saying, you know, we are very welcoming to all women and we're inclusive of all women. And I thought,
except this time.
But you're not.
Except this time.
As long as you keep saying that, you're never going to be able to change. You know, if I say to you right now, I am perfect. Tech is perfect. Hustle Crew is perfect.
Where's
There's
the scope
no
for
incentive
growth?
To change.
Where's the scope for change
Thank
on growth,
you.
Right?
Thank you. So it's not about, you know, he said, she said, I'm right, you're wrong. It's just about, we're not invisible.
Yeah.
So, you know, bring us in.
You lot give them a good G check. I like it. I like it completely. Like, yeah. I've always said anyway, from a UK perspective, we've always been much more comfortable talking about inclusion from the perspective of gender as opposed to race. So I'm not surprised that this is how things have gone down and that, like you said, they didn't really take an intersectional approach to the trade mission and that they probably thought nothing was amiss.
Yeah.
They were like, we got 10 or 12 white women, we good. We good. Like, look how evolved and look how great our sensibilities are. Like, not thinking, well, hold on, does this really represent the true talent?
Exactly.
And I mean, the leading tech city in the UK is London.
Exactly.
Now, London, if it's not already, it will be a majority minority city.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So how you've managed, and I don't know what the makeup of the trade mission was, but if you're telling me that it was the vast majority were either white women
They're all white women and then like one Asian woman.
All right, cool.
Out of a group of 20, 30.
How is it possible that you've reached that conclusion from the UK? I don't understand.
Exactly.
I don't understand. And if you have reached that conclusion in the UK and you said to yourself, okay, we've tried to find as many people as possible, but we couldn't find any, then, which is not the case, but let's say you did, that was the case, then that's a big effing problem.
Exactly.
Right? Like, so I commend the letter. I commend everybody's efforts here. Like, and like you said, there can't just be any more talk. Like, if you guys do take that meeting, get some actionable things from these guys.
Something
these
we
guys
can hold like, them accountable
yeah,
to.
Yeah, right. I don't want to hear this like, oh, you know, da-da-da. And if they responded back with, oh, then, you know, we make every effort to, man, shut the hell up. Obviously, you haven't.
Exactly.
You obviously haven't, right? Otherwise, this letter wouldn't be necessary.
Exactly.
But shout out to Deborah, shout out to everyone involved, shout out to everyone that signed it. That's
yeah,
dope.
Thanks for your support and watch this space. We'll keep you updated. What, just over 2 weeks ago, a Thai football team, like young boys, were trapped in a cave with their coach, a 25-year-old coach, when they basically like planned a hike and then unseasonable, whatever, monsoon rains. Or maybe it's like the beginning of the rainy
this
season.
Is why I don't like hikes. That's it. People always telling me, come on a hike. I ain't going on no hike,
I
bro.
Love hikes.
No, this is what can happen. Don't F with Mother Nature. This is what can happen. Like, I'm glad that everybody, all the kids got out all right, though.
So, yeah, so it was like 12 boys aged, you know, 9 to 12 with their coach, who's 25, former Buddhist monk, formerly trained Buddhist monk. They get trapped in this complex cave system. Thai police are like, right, now that the rains have flooded the caves, there's no possibility of walking back. They can't come out the way they came in. You know, expert divers had to make their way to them. In fact, very sadly, one of the Thai Navy SEALs actually like passed away, you know, as part of this mission. So very complex, very, very, very complex, very dangerous. As the Thai authorities, with the help of other countries, were planning different ways to rescue these boys, Tech's most famous founder slash villain slash futurist
slash, villain
slash
whatever,
yeah. You know, chimes in as he always does, a lover of publicity and attention, Elon Musk, saying that the SpaceX engineers have fashioned up with spare parts a submarine that could rescue the boys, because basically none of the boys could swim, none of them were trained in diving, and to effectively escape through the flooded caves would require some kind of support, whether they're in a tank, whether they had oxygen, whether they're being carried by divers, whatever. So very, very divisive response to Elon's support. You saw these. We were talking about these, basically. I'm curious to hear what you guys think. Lots of people felt that it was just like really self-motivated publicity stunt and a way for him to capitalize on the fact that the world's media was on this and, you know, no one's going to use it anyway. Some other people commented on the fact that, like, you know, this is classic Silicon Valley, like create some like overly complicated solution to like a simple problem. You know, the Elon supporters, the Elon cult come out and were like, no, this guy's a genius. Stop hating on him. Exactly. Your thoughts?
My thoughts. I haven't been following the story that closely, but I saw Erica Joy Baker of, does she work at Slack anymore?
Patreon,
right? She basically was like, Elon, why don't you kind of like flip Michigan still hasn't got water? Like, why don't you focus on that, right? So it does make me think that there is a element of this that is self-motivated, because there are plenty of problems in the world, right? That,
of course.
You know, all due respect, that are not just revolving around 12 young kids that are trapped, right? There are, you know, thousands of people in dire straits, millions of people in dire straits. So that does make me slightly skeptical. But it's hard for me to judge a person's motive without knowing them. I don't know what's in the guy's heart.
Come on now.
I was judging his
come
motive,
come on
right?
now.
Yeah.
And Elon, honest, it's Elon. It's the musketeer.
I think he needs to come off Twitter, man. He's been tweeting way too much.
Like, how is he running that
shit.
Business?
I don't
I'm starting
know, to be
believe someone else is running that Twitter account. Let's be real, though. Because he's saying that he's behind on deadlines with Tesla. The factory workers have to put in overtime. Apparently, there's now, like, a countdown in the Tesla warehouse where it's, like, the showing the number of cars that need to be made. Meanwhile, dude's up on Twitter. Like, or, like, going to gigs with his girlfriend Grimes.
But I think he's I think he's very aware of how much public discourse shapes the futures of his company.
Of course.
So
he's
when
public.
Right. So when his companies don't, like, when they miss a deadline, which they often do, you know, now the pressure's starting to come hard on him. He had what Steve Jobs had for a long time, which is the reality distortion field, that whatever he said that would happen, people kind of fell in line and just believed and never really questioned him, because they were
like, great,
right?
We're so now the press, billionaires.
Right, now the press is kind of getting on his back. Quite a few articles I've seen that are quite scathing about him. So I think now he's thinking, I've got to come on Twitter and fight back. You know what I'm saying? Even like some person tweet, he was complaining about how all the articles that were referring to him as the billionaire Elon Musk. And he was kind of like, well, before I was a billionaire, I was always a physicist and an engineer. So when you kind of throw the billionaire tag in front of me, it's kind of like limiting me. It makes me sound more nefarious than I actually am. Where if you imagine every article about Abadesi was like the millionaire or the billionaire, yeah, Abadesi.
I wish.
Right, okay, one day in it. Got rid of it, like, but yeah, like, and remember me.
The multi-billionaire.
I mean, if you, this is the definition of rich people's problems, because it literally is a rich person's problem. Like, none of us can have that problem. And then somebody was like, dude, you're literally a billionaire. Like, chill. You see what I'm saying? Like, and then he was like, but then the tweet kind of ended up with the statement of like, what have you done? You're hoarding all this money. And he was kind of like, no, I've made like 50,000 jobs and 250,000 jobs indirectly. Like, what have you done type thing, right? So that was a bit of a clapback by Elon, I'm not going to lie. But yeah, man, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how history, like, will view Elon Musk, whether he will come down, be just down as basically, not a charlatan, but somebody who had a big mouth and, you know, said more than he actually did. Or somebody who actually, what his defenders would say is, you know, the pioneer, the futurist, whatever, pushing humanity forward. I don't know.
What I do think is so interesting, though, is just, like, this psychology of, like, marketing and this psychology of publicity. Like, we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast before. You know, we've spoken about Arlen Hamilton, who's been on the show, Backstage Capital. It does help to be outspoken. It does help to rock the boat. Donald Trump, president of America, does this very well, shamelessly. Man doesn't even remember what he said this morning.
Yeah.
Because he's just constantly making stuff up. But whatever, you know, when we say yang, he'll say yang. When we go left, he'll go right. Like, he just wants to spark controversy. And I think someone like Elon Musk.
Michelle Obama.
We say black, he says white. No, but with Elon Musk, what's super interesting is that he always says that he doesn't spend any money on like paid advertising for his companies, right? So that's always like his thing. You know, I'm sensible, I'm frugal.
He pushes it all into R&D, also making the product amazing, right?
So he claims. However, in absence of that, what does he do? He does things like this, which bring all of the attention to him. So he's basically getting press and getting coverage just without having to use agencies.
Just like Trump did.
Yes.
Clinton outspent him, like, I don't know, some crazy ratio, but he had, I think somebody quantified it. He literally had like hundreds of millions of dollars of free advertisement because he'd tweet some crud and then he'd be all over like the newspapers or the TV channels, right? So do I begrudge him that tactic, Elon, that tactic? I don't, it's kind of clever. Maybe we should all use it.
Well,
maybe we should tweet something crazy for Tickish and see what happens. Like,
that's the thing, because now I'm like, maybe I need to be controversial. Maybe I need to get some.
I mean, I know a few bootstrap founders that literally their only channel for marketing is like something like Twitter. They'll have their own personal Twitter account and they'll go in and just like maybe like live stream their thoughts about building their product. And they've kind of like, and they don't spend any money on advertisement. So it is a tactic that is open to us.
Yes.
Right? So I'm not going to hate on those tactics. I mean, but I will say that Elon, man, just. I mean, I'm contradicting myself because a minute ago I said come off the Twitter, but then at the same time I'm saying, like, I don't know.
One thing I'll say though, like that tactic is really good because I always think of Jaden Smith, like Jaden Smith on
Jaden,
on Twitter, holla. Man, we should get him on the show.
I wish. I would want Will Smith on the show first though.
Oh yeah, of course. Like, yeah. But like Jaden Smith's Twitter is like just fire. It's amazing. Like, it's never like sensical, really. It's like, it's just like random music, random stuff. But then there's like little like philosophical
thoughts.
Stuff.
It's like high thoughts, basically.
You know what I mean, though? Yeah, but then like, they get like retweeted like crazy.
Yeah, it's like, what is human? What is green? Like, what? Just some really random shit, right?
I was like watching them for ages before any of his stuff was even on my radar. And then over time, I was like, yo, let me just give this guy some time.
Yeah. I love Jaden.
I was actually going to say, like, some really exciting news this week is that he released his latest album on IGTV only.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
How does that even work?
So he did like exclusive release. I mean, my thinking was, so the album's called Electric, came out literally a few days ago, so and he just released it straight to Instagram.
For one video, as in like it's an hour long video of his whole album.
So he did like the way Beyonce had Lemonade. Remember Beyonce did Lemonade on Tidal?
Right.
And it was like video, music, album. Like each track comes with a video. Yes.
Wow.
So he's basically released 5 new tracks with 5 accompanying videos straight to IGTV, which is like pretty dope.
That is amazing.
Which is, I mean, IGTV only came out a few weeks ago, but
that's forward thinking from
that's what I'm like saying. Jaden. And also like think about it. Who is his audience?
Gen Z millennials, like that's
they're gonna be on Instagram.
It's interesting though because you can't monetize IGTV, so it's almost like people have acknowledged that music is like a lost leader, that you just put the music out for free And like, even now, the big artists are just like, Jaden Smith is quite a big artist, and he's not even trying to put it on, because at least on Spotify, you get streaming revenue. So he's kind of here, just like, fuck it, I'll just dump it everything online straight away, right?
And sell tickets?
And yeah, exactly. So it's a lost leader. You lose money on the video and the music, but you just make your money on merch thing. Sorry to put like my business hat on, like, over quite a fun topic, but yeah, it just came to mind.
Do you think that therefore we're going to see more people releasing straight to IGTV?
Probably. I think music will just... I mean, it is kind of free already. I think eventually it will just become almost completely free to the point. And it's just the concert thing. If you support the artist, go to the concert for the live event.
I don't think it'll ever be completely free, because like, you forget the emotional connection people have with music. And if you go on a website like Discogs, which is effectively a vinyl marketplace, there are records selling for like 5 figures.
That's true.
Like really rare Aphex Twin releases and stuff like that, and that's never going to stop. Like, people still cut vinyl, and there's more vinyl like sold every year. But yes, there's definitely this idea. If anything, I think people create music with the intention of using that music as like a marketing tool. So this is not, this has been called an album, but it's only 5 tracks.
Yeah, true.
So it probably didn't take that long to record. I'm not trying to throw shade. I haven't actually like had a chance to listen to it, but I think what people are identifying is everyone's like video first now. You know, YouTube have just released their standalone music player here in the UK. It's being advertised all over our, you know, subway stations. So what's interesting with that is that, yeah, he's just like recognizing the fact that like, this is a engaging way to reach the consumer. And I actually was on Spotify yesterday.
You told me this.
I was like, okay, let me put some tunes on. I was on my laptop, played Rap Caviar. And I was like, oh, what's happening in the album art box over here? There was like original video content, Spotify behind the scenes, clicked it up, and then it like expanded into the main view. Spotify are now going behind the scenes with like record producers and rap artists, etc., and creating original content that plays in the desktop app.
That's sick.
It's amazing. Yeah, that's I was trying to work, but I was like, oh, what's going on here?
That's sick.
It's amazing. I don't even know why Spotify didn't think of that sooner, because YouTube is hot on their heels.
I agree. I think Spotify, like, as a company, has so many like undriven roads that they could go down that they haven't done. Like I've said, they should sign artists, they should have their own label. They should have video on the platform, they should have music videos on the platform where you can get streaming revenue from it. Why the hell not, kind of thing, right? And all kinds of stuff. Like, so yeah, I think it's about damn time, really. It's a cool feature. I haven't got it on my desktop app. Maybe I need to upgrade it. But like, yeah, when you sent it to me, I was like, rah, that's kind of sick. I didn't even know that you could do that. Shout out to Spotify. Sponsor us.
I just wanted to talk quickly about the fact that both Tesla and Apple are suing ex-employees for stolen secrets.
You thieves. What is it?
You know what's so interesting? Like, we haven't even, like, seen a self-driving car on the streets yet. I mean, I haven't personally.
Yeah,
there've been, like, controlled tests. But all of these lawsuits are in relation to self-driving cars, autonomous vehicles. It makes me feel like it's like an arms race, isn't it? Everyone wants to be the first to market. Maybe not only do you have first mover advantage, maybe it's going to be winner takes all. I don't know, but like, yeah, it's crazy. So yeah, what are your thoughts on why autonomous vehicles is such a contested space? And then secondly, do you think, like, basically, what do you think about huge multi-billion dollar corporations that are suing one single individual and therefore putting that individual in a position where they're basically facing federal prison?
I mean, I don't know the details of the case. So as you can see, I'm a very well-researched podcast host. But so the first question you said was, why is this such a hotly contested space? I mean, I think for a lot of companies, self-driving cars is quite like an existential threat, if I said the word correctly. So for Uber, for example, they've had a few lawsuits regarding self-driving cars. Now, if Tesla is able to have, for example, let's say Tesla comes to the market first with their self-driving cars, they've talked about having an Uber competitor where you just kind of press a button and their car will arrive and pick you up and drive you around. And part of Uber's business model has been, and bear with me while I explain this, part of Uber's business model has been signing up drivers as quickly as possible. And that is their moat. That is their defensibility, that they have all the drivers. What would be hard for me to set up an Uber competitor is because I don't have as many drivers as they do. It takes me ages to sign up that many drivers. Whereas if self-driving cars are around, all you have to do is buy the cars and you've got an army of self-driving car drivers. So Uber's essentially not effed, but they have to make sure that they're the ones that get there first. Tesla and Apple now. Apple's interesting. I think Apple thinks, when there are self-driving cars, we will have a whole bunch of time chilling in cars. We will have a lot of free time that is now freed up. And they want their software there in the car.
Yeah.
That's what I think. I'm just guessing. I don't know what's going on in the boardroom. Maybe there is a whole different play here. So to me, it's a big effing deal. And it will be like the most important product over the next 5 to 10 years if it does come to fruition. Now, companies suing their ex-employees, it just shows you how high the stakes are. And the problem is, like, in a lot of these kind of cutting-edge fields, AI, machine learning, self-driving cars, there are, like, not a handful, but relatively speaking, compared to the rest of the employee base of the world, there are a handful of people that understand this stuff and that are at the cutting edge.
That's true.
If you're, like, an AI researcher, for example, you're getting, like, football players' money. I don't mean... Yeah, maybe not British football, but, like, American football. Like, you're getting $3-4 million to come join, like, signing bonuses. It's crazy. Like, there are professors in, like, China that are getting that kind of money.
Wow.
And so you can... And self-driving cars, I'm sure it's similar. So these guys, if you're bouncing from company to company, yo, like, you've got a lot of trade secrets. Like, in previous startups that I've worked in, like, whenever I've left, like, I've had the CTO sit down with me, go through my laptop and make sure that I've deleted all the files.
Yeah, like,
you know what I'm saying? To make sure that I haven't taken anything.
But you could have uploaded it to Dropbox.
I could have done that, right?
I'm joking.
But even then, like, what's the IP that I'm taking with me? Oh, like, you know, the HTML goes like this, or the JavaScript is like this, or whatever. It's nothing crazy. Like, it's stuff that anybody can really know and understand anyways. But with this stuff, that advantage, that first mover advantage is so key. So I'm not surprised people are getting sued. This is like hotly contested stuff. I would love to see like a documentary on it or a book like explaining more in detail. But
that could be the next thriller, man.
Right. So what was the company? Waymo? Have you heard of Waymo before? So they were involved. I don't know enough actually about who owns Waymo. I think Waymo's
Google.
I think Waymo's the Google like version. And they and Uber have been suing each other even though Google invested in Uber. It's really like corporate shenanigans.
Yeah. Waymo is formerly the Google self-driving car project.
There we go. See? So, yeah, like, if you're listening, like, read up on it. It's really fascinating. I need to read up on it. It's
pretty crazy. It's funny as well, just because so many people take things to new companies when they go. You know what I mean? Like, people are headhunted because of their network, because of their expertise, and you know, anyone that's moved from one company to the other will know that you get asked stuff like, oh, how did they do it there? You know, when I moved from Amazon, like, oh, how did you do it at Amazon? Like, people want to know that stuff. But like you said, you know, I've never been in a technical role, so like any IP that I've created has always been some like qualitative form of something like a marketing project or like whatever.
Tactics,
I've never actually strategies. I've never actually gone, oh yeah, look, I've invented this algorithm that makes it easier for us to calculate XYZ. So
that will lead to like a $1 trillion company.
Exactly. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Shout out to Cardi B for having a baby. Mm-hmm. Shout out to all the mothers out there. Shout out to Serena actually as well for killing it.
Smashing it. Right. Serena, we worship you.
She's into the semis. So yeah, that's just a quick shout out for all the mums hustling out.
Cardi B's baby's called what?
I don't know. It's some people are like, this is like the people are like, this is like the blackest name ever. Like,
culture with a K.
Is it?
Yeah.
For real?
Yeah.
Ratted. I love it. Doing it for the culture, I guess.
Oh my there gosh. Go. Yeah. That's how she was conceived.
It took me a while to get that joke. In other non-related news, they're turning our favorite book, Sapiens, into a film.
Oh my gosh, Ridley Scott as well. Like, how's that man still making movies?
No, Ridley Scott's a bad man. What did he do recently? Blade Runner? No, that's not him, right?
No, that was Daniel Villeneuve. Well, he did all the Alien franchises.
Right, yeah,
and, like,
yeah,
Prometheus and stuff like that. I'm not saying he's not a G, but, like, to the point we were making earlier about Diddy saying there isn't enough representation in, like, directors and stuff. Like, Ridley Scott has already made so many films, and dude is old. Like, come on, man. Fresh blood. Rejuvenate.
Problem in films, you have to have credibility to make these kind of projects.
No, but like, that's what needs to change.
Like, I got a homie of mine who's trying to be a film director, like, and he's probably around the same age as me.
Ridley Scott is 80, by the way.
No!
He's 80 years old. Tell me they couldn't find anyone else but this 80-year-old man. Come on, he's made enough money.
That's a well-preserved white man. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie. White people age quite badly. That's a well-preserved guy. Wow, I didn't know that he was 80.
No shade at him. I'm just like, come on, man. But
I'm happy that that it's getting made by somebody. Like,
I actually think I'm sorry. Like, I love the book, but I just don't know if it's gonna work.
It's a documentary, though. It's not gonna be like.
Yeah, but they better like split that up and make it long and like invest time in it, because you can't rush that. That stuff is dense.
Yeah, that is dense.
That content That's is a dense. Book. And who's gonna play friggin' Neanderthal? CGI. You're gonna get some CGI budget.
I know a couple of Neanderthals. Anyways.
I will watch that.
I'll watch it. Yeah,
we should have
a
techish screening party.
Oh, that'd be sick.
Sapiens, holla.
Holla.
Maybe we can make some carriers. We're entering the monolithic age. I'll be there with like my caveman bat and
what was that guy called?
Leopard print.
The caveman from the UK that turned out to be like black. What was that guy called again?
What? Black Cave Man?
You don't know about that story.
Oh, yeah!
There was, like, that guy that they had his remains for, like, 20, 30 years, and then they actually did, like, a DNA analysis, and he turned out to be black, right?
Yeah, Cheddar Man.
Cheddar Man, there we go. I was calling myself, like, Cheddar Man Jr. for about a week.
He had black skin and blue eyes. I'm looking at him now. Yo, if you're listening, just Google Cheddar Man.
Yeah, this is like one of the oldest remains ever found in Britain, and he was black. Wow. And baby black. So shout out to Cheddar Man. The point I was going to make, actually, last remaining point on a political subject, I want to shout out, this is going to be really random to a lot of you, but I want to shout out a peace deal that was made by Eritrea and Ethiopia. I'm an Eritrean national. Represent. Not an Eritrean national. I'm Eritrean by origin, sorry. And there has been like a standoffish 20-year war that's happened, and the Ethiopian Prime Minister finally landed in the capital, Asmara, last week.
Got to promote Pan-Africanism. People in the diaspora. Peace. We're all connected.
Africa
all connected.
Unite, baby. Woo! Africa unite. So yeah, just shout out. That was a notable moment. And it was really funny because like on Eritrean Twitter, which I'll dub that now. I'll create that now. Yeah, like it was really funny because they opened up the phone lines between Eritrea and Ethiopia for the first time in 20 years. And people in Ethiopia were calling random numbers in Eritrea just to be like, yo, what up, man? We've like...
That's amazing. Yeah,
because for a long time, you couldn't make... There was no flights between the two countries. And like, we are like... brother sister nations in terms of like our ethnic origins were very similar, so we'd been divided for so long. So I mean, I don't know what the future holds, but it was quite a nice moment for the week.
Wow,
so shout out to that peace deal.
That's a beautiful note to end on. Celebrate. Yeah. Jubilations. Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening. Please jump into the comments. We've covered a lot in this last
A lot of ground, you know. Geopolitics, books, like Cardi B, Kylie Jenner. Never say that, we ain't varied out here.
Yeah.
So yeah, leave your reviews, use the hashtag TechIt, and also leave reviews on any other app platforms that you use, like Overcast and stuff. It's not necessarily an iTunes thing, but iTunes probably is most important.
Yeah.
Email us if you've got any questions.
Subscribe and share.
Subscribe and share and spread the word. We love you.